Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff. It's Judy Pilak sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will return with me on Monday. And Josh Gondelman is here. He's making a return visit to the show. He was with us in December. First of all, thank you for being here.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me.
Now, the second part is something you just proved. When we had you on in December, we got loads and loads of email and text saying the same thing. That's the nicest guy in the world.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Not just funny, but the nicest guy in the world.
That's very nice. Thank you.
What do you attribute all this niceness to, Josh? Where does this come from?
Oh, I have good parents. I have excellent telephone manners.
Is that right?
I answer my cell phone like I'm answering like my parents' phone, where I'll be like, hello, Gondelman residence. This is he. And it's like, yeah, we know it's he. The phone was in your pocket.
Right.
I know that.
It has to be you. It would have to be you.
Oh, you are funny.
Thank you.
Judy, you weren't sure until just now.
Nice and funny.
Yeah.
That's an unusual combination.
Trust me, I've heard that plenty.
Yeah,
I have friends who have introduced me. They go, Josh, you gotta meet Josh. He's very nice. Also funny.
Oh.
You have to say it separately.
Tag on.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys that go into this line of work, guys and girls, maybe not the happiest childhood. There's something that they're masking and doing stand-up, but no, I don't get that vibe from you at all.
No, my parents are wonderful.
Yeah.
I have a great sister who, she's a pediatric physical therapist.
Wow.
So they did a better job with her, I think. But
is she funny?
She's very shy, but very funny. So like when we hang out, I get to be the sole beneficiary of her
really?
Jokes.
Really?
Yeah, I just sit next to her and she'll just be real sarcastic. Great hat. You know, like, just, she's really dry and sarcastic, but also like the sweetest person and really shy. So it doesn't go outside the family, her sense of humor.
Do you still remember when you made the decision that this would be your life work, that at some point you'd be a writer and you'd be a stand-up comic? Was there a split second that happened, or over a period of time?
It was over time, because when I went to college, in high school, I'd written a play I'd like won a high school award for play. And I was like, well, this is what I'm good at, so this is what I'll do. I'm like I grow towards the light. I'm like a ficus.
Yeah.
And so when something good happens, I'm like, well, this is the thing that I should keep doing because someone patted me on the back.
Yeah.
So I went in and just like the feel of the theater department, it was very theatrical. And I'm not a great actor.
Yeah.
And I like the writing. I liked the writing part, especially of theater, better. And so I just didn't mesh. So I was like, okay, I'll write funny books. I'll write short stories and novels.
Yeah.
And then I did I was a fiction major in college, but I started doing stand up after my freshman year and was like, oh, this is a lot of fun. And so there was like a period where my parents hoped that I think that I would be mostly an author.
Yeah.
And that stand up was kind of like the thing I did as a supplementary side hustle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I taught preschool for years as like a job. And then when I moved to New York, I think that was the point where I was like, okay, it's sink or swim at this
yeah.
point. And if it's sink, that's okay. And I can always move back to Boston and get another teaching job.
Sure.
But that was when in 2011, summer of 2011. So it's actually 7 years this month that I've been in New York.
Oh.
That I'm really psyched about it. And I was like, okay, this is where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
And I have to see whether I can do it or whether it is just like a thing I do as a hobby, which is also fine. But I was like, I think I can make it so that this is, that I never have to do things that
and
are like
that. Everyone
was
supportive. Your parents said go for it.
Really sweet.
Yeah.
And my mom always said, make sure you have health insurance. That was her one caution.
Solid advice.
I know it was.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm moving to Denmark.
That's the way to be.
Yeah.
There's a very different gratification in doing stand-up where you're writing your own material and getting up and delivering it. But there's something thrilling about writing stuff down and having other people perform it. You feel that,
It's really fun. Yeah, because I write mostly, my daytime job is I write for John Oliver, and
mm-hmm.
it's very fun. I mean, for me, a specific joy is he's so smart and so funny. Getting him to say something like willfully stupid
mm-hmm.
or very like childlike, like, excuse me, we had a joke about him just being scared of tall foxes. Like, the idea of like a fox with long legs was very unnerving to him, and it made me laugh so much, him delivering it with like 100% sincerity of like, you can't have that because it's creepy and weird and I don't like it. And so it's really fun to watch him do that for TV, especially because he has this gravitas, the accent and the sincerity
yeah,
that
right.
comes from him, that when he does something really objectively obtuse and stupid. It's like a real joy to watch.
The beauty of the Tall Foxes joke was not only was it a well-crafted joke because it was so ridiculous, but the picture that the art department put up of the fox with the long legs.
It's so funny. The Todd, the artist who made it, said to me, I go, that's so funny. And he goes, I made it pretty tall. And then they said, taller.
Yeah. It's so funny.
It was like a fox that would have been like 5 feet tall.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's so funny.
Josh Gondelman is here. He's doing stand-up at Zanies this weekend. Go see him. It's the Zanies downtown here on Well Street. Don't forget, we've got White Sox tickets that we're giving away sometime between now and the end of the show. Here's a hint. It's going to be in the next few seconds. Be caller number 8 when you hear the White Sox sounder, and then more of Josh Gondelman with us, Bill and Judy on WGN. It's Bill F. It's Judy Pilak. Judy is sitting in for Wendy, who will return on Monday. Josh Gondelman is our guest. He's a writer for what I told you this last time, and I mean it. I think the best written show on TV right now.
Thank you.
Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
That's really, I really so appreciate you saying so.
And well performed. Everything about it is good. Talk to me about this. When you've written a joke, you know it's coming up in the show. I'm guessing you're backstage in a room watching the show. You know your joke or series of jokes is coming. A butterfly or two in the stomach or beforehand or not?
I'm excited. It's fun to hear John perform it. So like, I want it to do well with the audience. And it's less butterflies and just like an excitement of like, oh, here it comes. This is an exciting part of the day. I've been at the show for 4.5 years and been writing, and I did the social media for the first year.
Yeah.
So I've been writing for the show for 3.5 years and, excuse me, it's still very like thrilling to be like, oh, I wrote this in an office.
Yeah.
And then they picked it to go on television and then it goes on television and people see it. So it's like, I know that sounds like I just arrived in the city and I like threw a hat into the sky.
It sounds like that's a dream job.
It's really wonderful. Yeah, it's very exciting. And I try to like, even, you know, when the news is really heavy or like the workload for a week is a lot, I try to keep that in mind of like, oh, I get to like write these words and then a very talented, really smart, discerning person says them on TV and then, you know, a live audience laughs and then people see it all over the world. And it's really still very thrilling.
Right. People have said, you know, because of the current political climate,
yeah,
these jokes write themselves. Boy, all you have to do is open your eyes and the president will say something, but that's not
true.
The case.
It's absolutely not true. Someone, I wish I could credit this. So if you're listening, look it up. Someone tweeted years ago and it really stuck with me. The jokes that write themselves are terrible joke writers. It's like, that's so true. Where it's like, if the joke is self-evident, you can't... It's funny to say, right? Like to go, man, you can't believe this, right?
Yeah.
But when you have to write it for TV, you can't just present the story and then be like, and that's that.
Right.
So
right.
It's especially with the high stakes and like how the news is affecting people and how ridiculous it is. You know, it's not like we did a story a couple of weeks ago about a 7-Eleven ad campaign in Norway that was like, Norway has a high rate of chlamydia, buy your condoms at 7-Eleven.
Nice.
And that's funny. And that's kind of like, okay, there's a lot of fun to be had and it's more or less easy. But like when the news is both ridiculous and really serious and has an impact on people, it's
not
sometimes
funny.
A struggle. Because how do you top what's happening?
Right.
You know, it's not... because you can't be glib and disrespectful when the news footage is like a child in a cage.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the job is to write the joke. You can't just be like, you can't just punt and be like,
don't you
yeah,
feel
that's
like,
bad.
And a lot of times it's the irony of it that's funny.
Oh,
it's
sure.
not on the surface.
Sure.
It's so ridiculous. It's not funny, but it is funny.
Or
just the way you say it, just the way you look. I mean, John Oliver's so good at that.
He's really good. He's an excellent performer, which I think sometimes people, because he says so many words, I think sometimes people lose sight of like how hard that even is.
Oh,
just
sure.
like reading that from a prompter is like bananas.
But without taking a breath.
He's effortless.
He's got like a Kenny G circle breathing going on.
I'm sure he would look at that as a compliment.
I think so.
He would. When they first thought up the idea of The Daily Show, tell me if I'm wrong, I don't think their intention was to go after the president as much as they have, but you almost have to.
Yeah, I think that I would love to not as much. And I really love the weeks where we can fit in something like 7-Elevens in Norway or another really like the long story last week was gene editing. And it was really cool. But because of the immediacy and because everything, it's so in the air, everybody's talking about the president. And because of the impact of what he does, it's not just like some, you know, if you were a city councilor behaving the same way and didn't have as much power to impact people's lives, I think we could avoid it.
Right.
And just be like, this guy. But it's hard to avoid when it's on everybody's mind and there's real world impact.
But I imagine your mail runs the gamut from, boy, you took him to task in all the right places, to other people going, all right, enough with the president already. There's other things, right? You probably get all that.
I'm sure. I try not to read as much. I mean, I'm a never read the comments. Occasionally, we will read the comments because there are some very creative insults about John that make it there sometimes. Yeah. And he likes to hear those. I mean, don't yell him at him on the street if you see him.
But no one makes fun of him more than him.
Yes.
There's always pictures of him from when he was younger with bangs
and
stuff.
Yeah, it's very silly. Yeah. That one picture from high school is hilarious.
That's so funny.
It's great. And he has such a good sense of humor and self-deprecating sense that like that's like a nice color to have on our palette to get to paint with because he doesn't take himself.
Josh,
seriously.
Before stand up, you were a teacher. You taught preschool.
Yeah.
What do you miss about that?
I miss feeling like I was making people's lives better, or I had the capacity to make people's lives better on my best days when I was doing the best.
Yeah.
And so it feels. As much as like I try to write jokes and work on shows that are like well intentioned and aren't making people's lives worse, I think that like the direct work of like, hey, I saw a kid write his name for the first time. It was the last kid in my class. Every other kid could do it, and it took him like 10 minutes. Uh-huh. It was four letters, and all the other kids were like, we want to go outside.
They were very hard letters, though.
Yeah, very hard. Some squiggles, a lot of squiggles, a Z, even not in cursive, that stuff. And so it was, so you know, stuff like that, really like helping kids, like seeing these little breakthroughs, and that was really wonderful.
Yeah.
But you know, we do need to laugh, and that's an important job too.
Thank you. That's what I tell myself.
Yeah.
When I'm,
I bet a lot more people can teach than can be stand-up comics.
Oh,
so.
Maybe. I know plenty of comics that you wouldn't leave alone with a room full of kids. Not that they would do anything terrible, just that they would learn some new curse words, how to mix a drink.
But are there some similarities? There's got to be one or two similarities between teaching and stand-up. I mean, you're up in front of a crowd of some sort. You
yeah.
know?
I think that that's a big one. The idea of captivating the attention of people and figuring out how to get across the idea that's in your head and making it accessible to them. And I think there are a lot of comics that have taught, like Ted Alexandro taught, I think, to like kindergarten music.
Gabe Kaplan.
Sure.
Wait, so this is what you guys do? This is how you decide if you're funny?
You get a teaching job? Class.
And kindergarten seems to be the best.
They're a tough crowd.
Yeah.
There was a guy, do you remember Dennis Wolfberg years ago?
Yes.
With very big bulgy eyes. He was another guy that was a teacher.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Katie Hannigan, who's really funny and based in New York, is great. Yeah, a lot of people. I like it. But it's a different sensibility.
Right, but it makes sense, a sick kind of sense, that you've got an audience.
Totally.
They're trapped in a room.
Yeah.
They can't leave until the bell rings.
Two juice box minimum.
Yeah, right. Of course.
Yeah, you can bribe them. I mean, you could really, I guess, see if you're funny or not.
Yeah, and then when nap time hits, if they're asleep, you didn't do your job, right?
That's true.
Someone falling asleep. I've had people, you know, a late show, someone real drunk sitting right up front, kind of nodding off. And there's like few worse feelings than like, you know what? I paid money to be here, but I'm not going to be awake for it.
No,
I'm going to sit upright in a conference room chair, and it's just like, well, I've got a ways to go.
In the years you've been doing this, who's the celebrity you've met that you just go, I just worked with, or I just talked to that guy or that girl? Who has it been?
Oh man, it was so. I have a few of those. I met in passing at Sketchfest in San Francisco, Robin Williams, before he passed. And that was like a real thrill. Because he was somebody that, from when I was a kid, thought was so funny, and someone that I could text my parents and be like, hey, I just met this person. They would be like, whoa. You know, it's like, and also, weirdly, an hour ago, I was over at, the news station, like we did Good Morning Chicago, and Boots Riley, who is promoting his film. But he was also in like a legendary Bay Area hip hop artist. And I was like, I tried to be cool. I was not, I mean, I've never been cool, but that's who it was. But Robin Williams was like so thrilling.
Do yourself a favor. There's a biography out from Dave Itzkoff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm reading it now, and it's so good. Even if you think you know everything about Robin Williams, there's so much stuff in there that you just, it's an unbelievable life he led.
The other one is, I'm so excited to read it. David Itzkoff is such a great writer. Is Stephen Wright? I got to open for once in a theater in Western Mass, and like I'm from Boston originally, and I'm such a hometown guy in terms of like who I look up to, and so it's really it was really a thrill to get to like sit side stage and watch him playing guitar like at eye level.
I bet.
What an exciting! And that was right after I moved to New York, and everything in the city felt very stressful and new and vast and like unconquerable.
Yeah.
And so I got this call from a friend who said, who actually lives here now. He said, "Hey, are you open this Friday to open for Stephen Wright?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Do you want to look at your calendar?" And I said, "No, I'll be there.
It's open.
Yeah, if there's something, I'll open it."
Yeah,
oh, that's beautiful. Tell me this about Boston. We were just there last week. We stayed in Maine, but we always fly in and out of Boston, and I love it there. What is, I can't put my finger on it, but there's something about Boston that's like nowhere else, but I can't figure out exactly what it is. What is it?
I think one thing about it is that it's like it's a metropolitan city with all the things you would want out of a city, but it's tiny.
Yeah.
Geographically, it's so small.
Yeah.
So there's like the idea that like getting across town, especially at night, is like, you know, you just zip across. It's very small, even when there's not traffic, obviously.
Yeah.
And I just like this idea of, like, it has kind of, like, that small town, familiarity and pettiness.
Yeah,
where it's,
right.
Like, it's, like, a meaner place than New York, I think.
I would always say gritty.
There's a grit to it.
Yeah,
it's just, like, there's, like, an aggression. And so I really liked starting comedy there because it's very unlike my personality. Like, people don't believe I'm from there.
Right.
They're like, "No, you're Canadian," and I won't hear another word about it.
Now that's funny.
it's I get it a lot. And so I just like the, like, kind of intimacy of it. Like, that's what I really miss. The kind of... If I'm coming home from a show, I did it, you know, at an 11:30 spot, and I get off stage, and at midnight I'm coming across the Brooklyn Bridge from Manhattan, and there's traffic on the bridge.
Yeah.
And I just get so irritated about it. Whereas, like, if it's if I'm in Boston and I come home and I do a Thanksgiving weekend there every year, mm-hmm. and I borrowed my mom's car or whatever, and I'm driving down like Memorial Drive or Star Road Drive along the Charles River, and you see the foliage, and it's like, I'm in the middle of the city, but there's nobody on the road. And it's just like, oh, this feels like the whole ride feels like coming up the driveway.
That's perfect. That's the perfect description. Josh, so good to see you again.
Thank you so much.
Go see Josh Gondelman. Are you kidding me? He's only got two more nights here in town at Zany's on Wells Street. Zany's.com has all your ticket information. He's easy to find. Thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh, my pleasure. Fun. So great to see you.
So great to meet you.
So nice to meet you.
A quick break, some news, more show. It's Bill and Judy in for Wendy on WGN.